Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner, a weekly podcast brought to you by South Florida Charter Chapter of the International Coaching Federation. Our goal is to engage, motivate, and inspire. A lot has happened over the past few years, including the COVID pandemic, the global lockdown, civil unrest, climate change, and the Great Resignation. A half decade ago, we may have had a pretty good idea of what the world was going to look like. But now, things have changed, and we need to recalibrate and recalculate to find and define our new normal. Join me as we connect and collaborate with coaches, thought leaders, visionaries, and futurists as we explore opportunities and possibilities as we reimagine the future. Hello, I'm Jimmy Glenos, Vice President of Programming for ICF South Florida, and welcome to the Coach's Corner. Before we get into our conversation, I'd like to invite you to visit our ICF South Florida website so you can learn more about our benefits and program offerings. To learn more, visit icfsouthflorida.org and check out all of our calendar of events to see what interests you and join us as a guest. When you go to register, remember to use the promo code PODCAST. I hope to see you soon at our next event. This week, I sat down with my good friend, Parisa Bania. Parisa is a modern badass coaching modern badasses. That means she works with driven, edgy, powerful leaders to help them hit audacious goals and drive results. Many of her clients can often be described as disruptors, but I'll let her tell you more about that. In our conversation today, we discuss coaching these clients, the prevalence of imposter syndrome, and even the importance of Spanx. We really did talk a lot about Spanx, probably too much for a coaching podcast. Anyway, I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you do too. And now, my conversation with Parisa Bania. Hello, Parisa. It is so good to see you today. How are you?
I'm great, Jimmy. I am so excited to be having this conversation with you today. I've been looking forward to it for days and days and days.
Wow. I have too, but usually the guest doesn't get that excited about it.
I'm straight up giddy.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to hear that. You and I have known each other for quite a while now, a couple of years. Did we meet on Clubhouse or was it before Clubhouse?
I think we met because of Clubhouse, something I no longer go to, which I think is so funny. And we tried some things out, experimented with some folks on Clubhouse, and you and I have just done a really lovely job of staying connected and seeing how we're both doing and all the great, wonderful, positive things that we're putting out in the world. So I'm glad that we decided to do that.
Remember how excited we were about Clubhouse? And now neither one of I don't go on there either. I've like never, I see it on my phone, like I'll scroll past the app and I'm like, yeah, I don't know what happened to Clubhouse that neither one of us is interested.
You know, we likely felt more confident to be out in the wild. Clubhouse became a big hit because we were all, or my theory is anyway, that many of us were under lockdown or our access to public gatherings were limited. We were hungry for human interaction. I mean, I am a capital I introvert, and I was like, oh my God, I need people. I need to spend time with people. And then later on, you know, I'm happy to go back into my cave and not make eye contact, but I really wanted to be with people, and Clubhouse was certainly a way to do that. And I feel like it really speaks to how social of an animal humans are, that Clubhouse was great, and being in 3D with people where possible is just so needed and necessary.
It's so true. I love how you use the term 3D. I do that also. I'm like, how do you want to meet, 2D or 3D? And they're like, what? I'm like, do you want to meet 2D? i.e. Zoom or phone, or 3D, live, handshake, or hug, whatever the case is.
Right. It feels like 3D is like analog, like from the time of the Flintstones, like people don't meet in person anymore. What kind of old-fashioned thing is that? And there is something to be said for just being in the wild with people.
I think being in the wild is fantastic. I love being in the wild.
There's just something to it. And my goal is, even though you and I are on opposite ends of Florida at the moment, my goal is somehow you and I will meet in the wild somewhere. That's my aim for 2023. You heard it here.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I know the perfect way to do it. So in August, we're going to have a Luminous conference in Fort Lauderdale. So nice. You should certainly come join us there. It'll be a good time. We had our conference this year and we're going to do it again. It'll be August 4th. I know August 4th is the date. Who my speakers are, I am not sure, but we have good speakers already in line. I just got to secure the dates and get them into Florida for the blazing days of summer.
Yay.
Yeah. So that could certainly be a way for sure. Otherwise, we will find a way to three-dimensionally meet each other instead of all this 2D stuff.
I love it.
Speaking of in the wild, I know that you are an executive coach of badass executives. Can you please explain to the audience what, like, explain to me again, but tell everybody what your real job is?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So I love working with modern badasses, and they are the leaders who go 80 miles an hour in a 45 mile an hour zone without checking to see if their people are interested in the ride, let alone strapped in, interested in the destination, all the things. These people are your pattern interrupters. They are your change agents. They are the people that you need to help scale, grow, explore. And at the same time, they don't always allow for their content and context to be fully understood. So instead of everyone saying they are exactly who we need, instead leaders, these types of leaders is described as too much, bull in a china shop, difficult to manage or what have you. You know, if we were to bring them to practical examples, they are your Thomas Edisons of the world. They are your Steve Jobs of the world. They are your Shonda Rhimes of the world. They are your Sarah Blakely's of the world. Anyone who has changed or broken their industries for the better are the types of people that I love to work with. And why I'm particularly called to work with them is that, hey, you and I know about Steve Jobs. You and I know about Shonda Rhimes. You and I know about Thomas Edison. You and I know about Sarah Blakely. Who have we not met? Who has been sidelined because they couldn't get out of their own way, or the people that were leading them didn't know how to tap into their power and channel their awesome? What is the opportunity cost of us never meeting those people? That's why I love advising and coaching them as much as I do, because I see them expanding opportunity and possibility for all of us.
Yeah. So just because they're change makers, just because they're visionary, doesn't necessarily make them, yes, modern badass for sure, 100%. But it doesn't make them like necessarily difficult in the workplace. Right. So like I wouldn't consider, like, I know people say, oh, Thomas Edison, you know, whatever. And Steve Jobs is supposedly, you know, not the easiest to get along with and like had to have things his way, cared about the people, but really cared about the project. Right. Like the project has to be done. Yeah. It's not you personal, dude. We just have to get this thing done.
Right.
And so, you know, but I wouldn't have thought about Sarah Blakely in that mode. But then again, I haven't really read a bio of her either. So,
well, what's interesting about her, and thank you for asking about her. What's interesting about her is, she was selling fax machines door to door. And that was back in the day when people used fax machines, A, but then also B, it was also back in the day where, business attire was a thing as opposed to business casual being a thing. And the amount of no's that she heard, the requirement that she made of herself to be scrappy, she changed the nature of women's undergarments because she refused to take a no. So what would she do? She would call on all of the high-end department stores. She would pretend to be her own like head of sales. She would talk to as many buyers as humanly possible. She would model the product. Like there wasn't anything that she was unwilling to do because she was so clear about what the end state is. I mean, she was the David to girdle Goliath. Let's say, I just made that up actually.
I don't know what that means exactly, but okay.
Well, I mean the ladies foundation garments, very restrictive, uncomfortable, miserable, and so not keeping with what a modern woman was wearing at the time, let alone now. But even then, a modern woman for that time, 20-ish years ago, undergarments were not keeping up with what women were doing. And it was very constrictive and restrictive.
But Spanx are pretty restrictive or constrictive. Compression.
It's compression. Compression is different from feeling like you can't breathe.
True. Right? Well, that's because all the undergarments were made by men.
Precisely. And yes. So this was by women, for women, and also knowing how women were living and will likely evolve into their living and being and doing and all of the things. She broke the industry and she made it again. So look at all of the different types of compression garments that are out there. While I'm not suggesting that she is 100% responsible for all the flavors and permutations and combinations, you can certainly point to how determined she was and how much of a visionary she was to get that ball rolling. And also, until last year when she sold a significant stake, she was still 100% owner of Spanx, self-made billionaire. I mean, can't get more badass than that.
No, that's super badass, no doubt. And even created, because now, as I understand it, there are like man Spanx or something or other. So, you know, to take care of our little belly.
Amen.
Or big belly, whatever we have. Thank you very much for that, Sarah. We appreciate the men do too. So thanks for coming into the undergarment world for us. Yes. So how does, because you had said earlier about discovering these great modern badasses. So how does that look like in your coaching realm? Like how do you find these people and how do you work with them? And what are some of the trouble things that you come across when working with these maybe difficult people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is very much a physician heal thyself sort of experience. So in my corporate life, I was one of those people. I still am one of these people. You don't ever stop. You learn how to channel your awesome and your power and your influence. How they typically show up is, you know, if their job description was in the shape of a square, they'd say, well, why can't it be a triangle? Why can't it be a circle? Why can't I add things? Why can't we do things a little bit differently? Why can't we move the needle a little bit? Why can't we lean into ambiguity? Why can't we try something new? So these are the types of people that are unafraid to ask why not, right? These are the types of people that are poking all the time because of boundless curiosity and not because they wake up deciding to be a troll. It's just that they see so much opportunity that could exist on the other side that they say, how do I channel my resources? How do I channel my creativity? How do I channel my intuition? How do I channel the thought that there's no crying in baseball, that if one thing doesn't work, then something else certainly can? Why can't we utilize our senses of humor to find whatever that next big thing is? So these are the people that are questioning and are curious. What often happens with these people, and it certainly happened in my case, was understanding content and context. You can ask the questions, how you ask the questions matters, and then when you ask these same questions also matters. So that was the how and the when was something that was difficult for me to learn. And how they redirect frustration, or how do they find ways to communicate in ways so they are seen, heard, understood, and respected? how do they allow themselves to have their content and context fully appreciated by the person on the other side of the table? And more importantly, or just as important, I should say, that how do they become curious about the person sitting under the other side of the table too? How do we explore each other's values? How do we explore what's important to each one of us so that when we get to the point when it's time to start relating to one another, it's, oh, okay. I know, for example, one of Jimmy's values is creativity. What if I were to position what I would like to try to do within the realm of his value of creativity? Or if it's loyalty, or if it's authenticity, whatever it is that your core value set might be, me understanding as a badass that that's important to you and having a conversation on your terms, as opposed to trying to pull you over into my terms. And by so doing, I also share with you my value set that's important so that you say, oh, you know, it's not that she's asking these questions or she's trying to poke holes because she's bored. It's because she's seeing something really interesting and she's inviting me along for the ride as, a passenger, a co-creator, co-navigator, or whatnot. So my people are tired of doing the same things over and over and over again and getting the same results. They realize that it's not time to change who they are fundamentally, perhaps shift how it is they engage with other people. So those are the individuals that work with me. And then also I have companies that work with me to say, we have these high potentials. We love these high potentials. They are wonderful raw material. We don't want to clip their wings. What we want to do is help them channel their awesome. We don't know how to do it, Parisa, but we believe that you can help us channel their awesome. So I work both with companies with their high potentials, as well as one-on-one leaders who want to up-level their own leadership game, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. That sounds awesome. Working with those kinds of people is just, I think that's who we all want to work with. Well, we don't all want to work with that. I would work with those people as well.
Yeah.
Those seem like a lot of fun, right? And it was funny, as you were talking about your typical client or someone you would work with, it almost sounded like they were the ones who were aggrieved. Like they were like, nobody understands them. And they're the ones that, need to be honestly understood. And then at the end, you added, and they need to understand and be empathetic to the person across from them and see their perspective and put on the different glasses. But it was funny, as I was listening, I'm like, well, wait a minute, you're making it sound like they're the, like, oh, poor me, but they're the badass.
Well, and you use the word empathy, which is exactly right, is that once they allow, they're so used to this suit of armor and being chief executive of everything and being Wonder Woman or Superman instead of Diana Prince or Clark Kent, that once they open up a little bit more, once people see who they are, once they let people see like the soft underbelly, then it becomes easier to be relatable. And it becomes easier for them to relate to other people. And one of the things that's true about badasses is that no one is harder on them except for themselves. They have a negative highlight reel that's on constant repeat, like all the times that they made a mistake, all the times that they unintentionally cause disrupt, on all the times that they unintentionally hurt someone else. We're not talking about toxic people. We're not talking about narcissists. We're talking about people that are well-intentioned and don't always use their communication chops in ways that are effective. And so once we become a little bit more 3D instead of 2D, once we share a little bit more about ourselves and become more curious about the person sitting on the other side of the table, what magical things happen? And that possibility, that magic, that creativity, I think is more than worth its weight in gold.
It sounds like you're saying that Brené Brown is right and that vulnerability is super important for good leadership.
Oh my gosh, yeah. it's one of these things is that it's so easy for a modern badass to believe if they keep the armor on all the time that people will see them for the strong leader as they are. You know, the truth is the people sitting on the other side of the table just don't believe it, right? It's that suit of armor is kind of like emperor's new clothes. Everyone sees that you have some sort of insecurity or that you're worried about something and that you're desperate to hide it. So what if instead you showed everyone where your Achilles heel was and say, you know, this is what I'm sensitive about, or this is what I'm vulnerable to. And it just becomes so much easier for everyone to stay who they are fundamentally. No one's broken. I don't have to change to make myself palatable to you and vice versa. All we have to do is be willing to understand each other better.
Yeah, no, I get it. What do you think is the incident rate of imposter syndrome with these modern badasses?
Oh, you know, is it imposter syndrome or is it uncertainty?
Little of both, but you know, we like to call it imposter syndrome because we like to give everything an affliction. So that way it's someone else's fault.
Right. And
we can place the blame somewhere.
Yeah. There's a really interesting HBR article from like almost 2 years ago about stop telling women they have imposter syndrome. And my badasses are male and female. I'm like gender neutral. I'm scared because I haven't done this yet, or I'm scared because I don't know how this is going to turn out. And I'm desperately trying to not show everyone I'm scared. That's like one bucket. And everyone can see that you're scared to death of something. They just, and they are desperate for you to say, just say it out loud. It's okay. We're all scared of something. That's one bucket. And then the second bucket is the imposter syndrome, which, you know, the good news is they didn't invent it, nor will they be the last people to experience imposter syndrome. So once we like normalize imposter syndrome and say, I mean, you're unique and everything, but you're not that unique, then it becomes easier to say, yeah, you know, it's, of course you're worried that someone's going to believe you're a fraud. It's okay to feel that way. And if you were to just say out loud, you know, I'm really good at X, I'm uncertain about Y, you know, can I invite in your feedback or ideas for Z? Then like that weight, that awful boulder that lives because of the cocktail of uncertainty, imposter syndrome turns into a pebble. It becomes so much easier to engage and work with others.
Yeah, absolutely. I find it interesting in my experience, it seems like all the people who, quote, have imposter syndrome are very successful people. Nobody who's mediocre has imposter syndrome. Right. It doesn't cross their minds. In fact, they're more on the narcissistic side than the other. Right. Only really successful people feel like the bottom's going to drop out. Someone's going to find me out. I'm not as good as they say I am. And it's just right. Hilarious because they're all super, super successful people. And yet right. They struggle with that, which is, I guess, sort of like the, because they always feel inferior, they keep trying harder and harder and harder and not necessarily taking risks, but really trying to either yeah. hone their craft or get better yeah. or work harder, longer hours. And maybe that's the vicious cycle, right? Because right. you're like, oh my God, I am working so hard, so many hours to do this thing. This is really hard. I'm obviously not as good as I think I am, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, if there is a leader that you meet that doesn't have at least some imposter syndrome, run. Go in the opposite direction. They are not your friends. They will never, ever, ever, ever be your friend. And it really speaks to, you know, it's the beauty of really calling out what you believe your zone of genius to be. And what you know your zone of incompetence to be. So I believe my zone of genius to be anything having to do with advising and coaching of badasses. That feels like joy. That feels like immense satisfaction. It feels like play for me. But anything where I am severely incompetent, you can tell. You can tell, not only because I'm bad at it, A, but B, even if I were to able to mask like lipstick on a pig of how bad at it I am, you will know by my energy, my voice, my expression, whatever it is, like, oh my God, she's horrible at this. And she just needs to let this go. Like bookkeeping, for example, certain types of coaching I am horrible at, and it shows. And I think there's beauty in saying, this is what I'm not good at. Here's where I could use your help and input. Here's what I'm really good at. Let's put something in our ideation kitchen together, as opposed to everyone like feeling tortured on their own.
Yeah. Tortured on their. Yeah. So true. Isn't it hard working with a client who you soon realize you're like, oh my goodness, I am not equipped for this. This is not my, I am, like you said, this is my zone of incompetence. And you're like, oh boy. Oh, and it's not an imposter syndrome at all. It's just like, oh boy, this is really going to be a challenge. You know, I might have to defer.
You know what? Earlier this year, I was so giddy when this happened. A client and we like mutually fired each other. It was very early in the engagement, and it was clear that how we saw things were not in alignment. And I think maybe 2 years ago, me would have been really upset about it. Or I would have just tried like square peg round hole, which is what I did so much in my corporate career, and just kind of push my way through it, coming from a place of scarcity. And then this year I was so relieved. I called my coach up and I was like, this thing just happened. It was like right before my birthday. I'm like, oh my God, early birthday present. This thing just happened. They should have, like, this client should have who is best for them. And I should be working with who is best for me, because that's how we show up. And that conversation, I don't think would have happened had I not been completely honest about who I was as a leader and what I believed in. So, you know, going back to our earlier comments about content and context and just having empathy for one another. To be able to have empathy for someone else means to have it for yourself too. It's like, I knew that if I didn't speak out loud what was important to me to this client that I no longer work with, and it would have been terrible. It would have ended in complete disaster. Instead, it was, all right, let's just say we're complete and it's all good.
Yeah, because you don't want to be in a space where you're compromising your own values, your own beliefs, your own ethics, for that matter.
Right. Holy cow. Precisely. It would have been miserable. It would have been like an energy vampire.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big differences. And I don't know this is a fact. I'm just like saying this out loud because it just occurred to me. Is probably one of the difference between a certified coach and a self-proclaimed coach. Is that, you know, maybe I shouldn't say anything because I don't know anything about other.
No, I mean, it's your point of view. Certified. You're free to have a point of view. Go ahead and share it.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, like, you know, if you're a certified coach, you have a code of ethics that you adhere to, whether, you know, whoever the agency is, the body, like if it's the International Coaching Federation or even IPEC or whoever, you know, any of the other coach you and the other schools. But if you don't have that schooling and you don't have that body of ethics that you have to go to, and you just go out and start calling yourself a coach of whatever kind you are, you're probably going to take all sorts of clients just because, you know, it's money, and you may or may not have scruples, ethics, those sorts of things. That's why I like the idea of having more certified coaches, because it levels up the bar of quality of the industry.
And also it speaks to someone's commitment to craft, is the word that's coming to mind. I don't know why I said craft, but we'll go with it. I was having a conversation with someone the other day who received his, he has formal training in psychology. He's formally a therapist, and he also coaches. And so he has room within his coaching model to take elements of his therapy background, his psychology background, as well as elements of coaching. Had I not had the training I had, or had I not chosen to adhere to the code of ethics at the ICF 2.0, IPEC 2, then it's not that I don't have my personal ethics. It's I don't know where the wall is where I say, oh, I'm not supposed to go there. And I have heard some coaches use the word heal, which H-E-A-L, not H-E-E-L, use the word heal. And that makes me go to a bad place because I say, no, these people aren't broken. In the event that they feel like they may be broken, that is a referral to a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, someone who is trained and licensed in mental health care. Right. We are not those people. We can see it. We can work side by side with someone who is a licensed professional like that, or a trained professional like that. And a lot of my clients work with me as well as have a therapist at the same time. I am very clear, not only for me, and it was also helpful to your point of having that code of ethics that we all agree to as a community to help us kind of be focused and move forward for the greater good.
Right. I agree with you on that. The word heal, H-E-A-L, is a little cringy. And like you say, they're not broken. First of all, that person's not mentally or whatever broken. And you're not a physician. You're not a doctor of any kind. You're not healing. I do wonder if the person, the people that use the word heal might be taking that from sort of a spiritual / biblical sense, where, you know, many preachers and whatnot claim that they heal people mm-hmm. through the Lord or through whatever sure. it is. And so that's another side, definition or interpretation sure. of the word heal. So maybe that's where it comes from.
Sure. There, it may be someone who provides pastoral care while they are also coaching. That's fair game. If someone calls them a little bit more literal, when someone calls themselves like a straight up coach or a business coach or a life coach or a holistic coach, whatever it is, it's whenever the word heal comes anywhere near that energetic field. And I get that it's just me. No shade. If you use the word heal, there is something about it where I say, unless you have specific extra training, please don't use that word.
I'm with you on that, Parisa, for sure.
Good.
So, hey, let's switch topics a little bit. Yep. It still pertains to you because you are the guest today. I understand you are writing a book. Can you share anything, or is this like totally top secret?
Oh, it's not top secret. I've been sharing with the socials. It's called Modern Badass Tales from the Leadership Front. It is going to be published early 2023. I don't have an exact date yet. Just last week, I had received my own galley copy, and it was the real deal. You know, I was able to flip the pages. It's really exciting. And it's written as a love letter from a modern badass to modern badasses. And some of the things that you and I have been talking about in this conversation is how do we help a modern badass be seen, heard, understood, respected, and valued as a leader, without feeling like they have to change who they are at their core to be palatable to someone else. They're not broken. And the person sitting on the other side of the table from them, also not broken. There are ways in which we can engage as modern badasses so that we can get to the audacious goals and dreams that we have in mind and have other people excited and engaged to join us for the ride.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to read the book. I can't wait to get my copy. Is there going to be an audiobook version as well?
I'm thinking about it.
Are you going to do the narration?
I do have one of those Yeti microphone things. Oh. Blue, whatever the thing
right,
is
right.
called.
The blue microphone or the Yeti. the blue microphone.
Yeah, the blue microphone thing. So yeah, I'm equipped and I'm toying with it, because the reality of these days is that we're all listening to a podcast or we're all doing something as we're headed somewhere else. So it's a very strong likelihood that it will be an audiobook form as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I am a reader, but I'm much more a listener because I can do it in my commute to the office.
I received that.
For sure. So what's one thing that you can share with our audience today that would be a way for a modern badass to be a little bit better understood or better understand their coworker to help them in an effort to lead to working with you or buying the book, some little teaser tip right. that would help them immediately if you can.
Right. No, fair. Great question. So what I do with my clients is something I also talk about in the book, is that I invite them to take a stroll down memory lane to recall the instances where they walked away from a conversation, a meeting or whatever, where they're like, I don't like how that felt, or I don't like the outcome of that meeting, or why wasn't it that they couldn't get what I was saying? And so it's an exercise first of helping them understand what their key values are. You'd be surprised at how many leaders don't know their key values off the top of their head that they can like recite. And then once they have the values intact, is all right, think about these meetings where things just didn't go right, or you felt like you got frustrated, you lost your temper. What about those meetings were not aligned with your values? Like, what was true in that moment that you felt like you were out of alignment? What triggers were occurring for you? How was your body reacting? Were you getting anxious? Were you getting, was your foot tapping? Was your breathing elevated? What are all the physical markers you have that you were about to be Mount Vesuvius as opposed to someone who was eager and engaged in a conversation? So I have a step-by-step approach of how someone can take a step down memory lane so that they can identify what those markers are, so that on a go-forward basis, if they're about to have a difficult conversation or they're about to talk about something that's really important to them, they have these tools in hand so that they can have a constructive conversation as opposed to something that to them felt destructive.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting how important awareness is, because once you have awareness, yes, you can have acceptance, or you can hope to accept the things that are happening. And I think, like you were saying, where when they go into this next meeting or this next conversation or whatever those things are going into, because once they understand and they're aware of their values, like you said, some leaders, you know, were surprised how many don't know what they're, you know, just a short list of three or four. Right. But once they're aware of what they are, now they have anchors to Precisely. How to proceed, what to stick to, what they can give on. And so I would say, I love that approach of getting to those value points so that they become aware of what's important to them. And now they have anchors and they can build parameters, boundaries, limitations that are required, if required at all. And then they can turn that into, I'm presuming, how do I become aware of other people's values so that I can anchor on those? So if you're looking to persuade somebody to do something or negotiate with you, learning what their values are, now you can have a proper meeting because of that awareness. Awareness is just key to everything you ever wanted to do in leadership or relationship, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I share is called the values velocity matrix. And so there's speed, which is the rate of travel. There's velocity, which is the rate of travel in a given direction. Velocity is what a well-defined goal looks like. And so where we operate at our best is when it's highly aligned with our values and we are operating with velocity. That's what I call excellence. It's the times in which we are operating with speed, we're just moving, but there's no kind of defined goal in mind. And it's also something where we're just we're just not aligned with it. We're not feeling it. That's where the explosions happen. We're not aligned with something. We don't care about something. It's not defined. And that's where some of the worst tendencies come out. So that four box matrix I've developed is also really helpful for that as well.
Well, that one, it seems like we're going to have to get the book for that one.
Yes.
That one's the secret.
Yep.
You can't give all of this stuff away for free. Totally understand free. So that is absolutely fair. I love that idea though of the velocity. And you're right. You can go at speed, but if you don't have a direction, then what's the point? You know, that's the, what is it? The busyness,
right,
of business.
As it's, opposed to business.
Busy, 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 action, action, action. But where, right, are you going? Right. I like to use, like to call it maybe intention, right? So if I'm acting with intention, like maybe I don't have a goal, but if I have an intention, at least then I know I'm doing what I intend to do. So whether it's, right, adhering to a value of mine, or whether it is something I'm seeking, whether it is a goal, but if I stick to my intention, I'm a lot more effective.
Oh yeah, 100%. And actually the word intention is something I play with my clients quite a bit. So there's the word intention, acting with intention. And then there's being in tension, T-E-N-S-I-O-N. And so understanding the difference between the two, is it intention or are you in tension?
Oh boy.
Asking those two questions.
Nice little wordplay there. I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, right?
Totally fun. Oh, that's awesome. Hey, so can I ask you one more question?
Please.
What do you hope or want to see or expect to see in the future of coaching?
Ooh. I want heightened levels of understanding for how coaching could be democratized, even on middle to lower level leaders in an organization. Right now, companies don't mind sponsoring it for their high potentials up at the top. How do we create solutions to democratize access for coaching so that everyone, it's made available to everyone? And I know that BetterUp exists, and that's fine, but using, having a democratized view of coaching within an organization, how do we make that accessible to everyone? I think would be a worthy exploration.
I agree. I think that would be pretty amazing. Is democratizing coaching across all levels would be, then we don't end up having really difficult middle and senior particularly senior managers, but there's a lot of tough middle managers. But yeah, oh, the, yeah, longer it goes unaddressed, the more entrenched it becomes.
I mean, what if ideally people like me would have to be out of business because everything that whoever it is that I'm working with now, those things happened earlier in their career to stuff that left unchecked, or they weren't given the guidance or the development or training. Put me out of business.
That's our job as coaches, right? To get fired by our client.
You know, that's a sign of a job well done.
It's the most ridiculous business model ever created.
Hey, job well done.
I know. Job well done. I agree. So Parisa, where can people find you out on the internet and maybe around town?
So I am on LinkedIn. I am Parisa Bania on LinkedIn. B like boy, E for Edward, H for Henry, N for Nancy, I for India, A for Apple on LinkedIn. Also, sixthsensestrategy.com is my site. And Jimmy, I am betting that in your show notes, you will have both of these links available for people to click on.
You have listened to a podcast before. You, yep, know that we always say that
the
information will be
two
in the show notes. For those of you that didn't get it, will you do me a favor though? Can you spell sixth sense? Because I know,
absolutely,
I guarantee people do not look at the show notes all the time. So
that's fair.
How is it? Yeah.
S like Sam, I for India, X for X-ray, E for Edward, N for Nancy, S for Sam, E for Edward, sixthsensestrategy.com.
Gotcha. Sixth Sense, because I was going to put the S in there for Sixth Sense, but it's Sixth Sense, the X.
S-I-X-E-N-S-E strategy.com.
Awesome. Parisa, this has been such a pleasure. I love talking with you. And I'm so glad that we're friends and colleagues. And I can't wait to meet you again, three-dimensionally for the first time ever one day this year.
Way earlier than the conference in August, though. Let's put it put the intention out
put
there.
The intention that out there, and we will move with velocity.
Yes, we will. We will.
No doubt, Parisa. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you more.
What a great conversation! It's always so educational and inspirational to talk with colleagues and learn from their experiences. That's why it's so important to continue to collaborate with others. And that is one of the best reasons to consider working with a certified coach. Working with a certified coach opens a whole new space to learn, grow, and design your future the way you want to. To learn more about what coaching is and how it can help you, please visit our website at icfsouthflorida.org. There you'll find educational resources, our events calendar, and our coaches directory. We hope you'll find exactly what you're looking for. And if you like what you see, consider becoming a member. We'd love to welcome you to our community. Well, that's it for now. Thanks again for joining us in the ICF South Florida Coaches Corner. Until next week, take care and be well.